Greetings and salutations. This is the David Martinez podcast coming at you on December the 28th, a few days after Christmas. A bit late, I know. I really meant to try to post something before Christmas. You know, there's all this stuff happening and great Christmas material to sort of talk about and things that you like and things you don't like and all this commentary on this, that, and the holiday and people and consumerism and just any number of things you can talk about. Nah, I just didn't get a chance to do it. You know, at the end of the day, I'll just say what everybody says during this time of year, like, oh, dude, what happened? You didn't do holidays. And I was doing things, shopping and friend, you know, it's just the holidays. I was busy, you know, so that's, I'm going to plead holidays. That's what I'm doing today. I didn't get around to it. I really wanted to. I actually wrote out and planned what I was going to talk about before Christmas, and I just didn't get a chance to. So, you know, sort of bummer. better luck next year, I guess. I'll just save those things for next year. So it was what it was. But anyway, not all of you really pay attention to what I say. Anyway, last podcast I made the unfortunate discovery weeks after it was posted that I posted it on the website, but the audio I added was the audio from the previous one. So number 4 got posted, but the number 3 audio was there. And no one noticed. Like, everyone just sort of like, oh, dude, good podcast. Nice. Hey, thanks, bro. Totally listening. No, you're not. You're all liars and yes men. My sister-in-law, Abby, actually noticed that. She's like, I don't know if I made a mistake, but I think you posted the same audio twice. And then I corrected the mistake, and then some people actually noticed afterwards. They're like, oh yeah, that was actually kind of funny. But I'm going to come up with a code. I'm going to weed out the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, when it comes to my friends and those who really, you know, pay attention. So if you're listening and you actually, you know, took the time to listen to this and whatnot, I'd like you to comment a code, a password. We'll say that it's, butter cookies. Just put the word butter cookies in a comment somewhere or in a message to me, and then on, okay, yeah, you did listen. You actually paid attention. So the code word this week is butter cookies. So we're going to do that. But anyhow, Christmas is sort of come and gone. I had a wonderful holiday this year. It was very nice. I spent it with my family, did the Christmas Eve thing, lots of family, hanging out, just spending time together. I spent a Christmas Day partially with my family, partially with my wife, which was lovely. You know, just unwinding and just having celebratory food and drink. And then the presents were nice. You know, I got some cool socks. I got a power drill, some sweaters, like, and not like sweaters that people, you know, usually think when they think holiday sweaters, like, oh, dude, a sweater. No, like, I got a good sweater. I got good sweaters that I like. I got some nice beer and then this lovely, lovely whiskey, which I'll talk a little bit about later. So all in all, like, it was a big, big win for me this Christmas, and I'm very, very stoked. And I do. I love this time of year. I will say that I think when, for me at least, I love the holiday itself, but most stuff leading up to it is just kind of a drag. I don't enjoy it hardly at all. Fortunately for me, as I've gotten older and gotten a wife, most shopping stuff is, you know, I can just, all right, Anna, here's the money, and you just sort of make gifts and thoughtfulness happen with all of our family and friends. And that's usually kind of how the role goes. But for the limited amount of shopping I do have to do, I just hate it. I've never liked being in stores, retail stores, especially clothing stores. I've never liked it. It's always been a bummer. Even as kids, like, you know, my mom would inevitably drag us to some place at the Citadel or whatever, and she would, like, okay, just be good. You know, she'd do a little bit of that bribing thing where it's like, well, okay, we'll go eat and we'll do something nice afterward, but just stick with me here. And, like, we go, okay. And then, you know, your kids, you're young, you're boys, and you get bored, and then you start, you know, goofing off, and you start getting louder, and you start playing with things in the store, and then you start fighting, and then things happen, or we'd get dropped off at the toy store, and inevitably we just start playing with toys and throwing things, or we'd get into a fight because of something somebody did, and then of course we get kicked out of the store, so we're waiting there like idiots until mom gets back. And that's just always what shopping has sort of meant to me. And then when I got married, the cycle repeated itself. You know, Anna would take me to a store, and I made a note very clear from the very beginning, this is not my bag. So, you know, I would start getting loud, and then she's like, shh, Stucky, we're in a store, we're in a store. I'm not being silenced. So I'd yell things out really loud, like, that's not my baby! Or something along those lines. Just to make sure that my protest is known, that my voice was heard, that I'm here against my will, and I don't like it. Or I'd just lay down in the middle of the store, just like, nah, just call me when you're done. Or sometimes, and I still do this every now and again, we'd like go through Michael's, and I just started knocking things off shelves and just walk away. And I'm knowing that she can't help herself but go and try to pick it up. And just like, all right, cool, and you know, let me know when you're done, because I'm going to be doing this until you're finished. So that aspect of the holiday I've never been a fan of. But again, fortunately, I have to deal with it a little less and less and less, which is nice. So maybe my tactics are working. my voice has been heard. My silent protest has been effective. My not so silent protest has been effective. And, you know, I don't have to do it as much anymore, which is great. So, you know, so that's always nice. The other thing that always bothers me during the holidays, and I don't know about the rest of you guys, but anybody who I feel like drives a lot and drives to a lot of different places a lot, I feel like should probably be on board with me on this, but I feel like traffic is sort of, you know, very seasonal. Like in the beginning of the year, it always starts off as being relatively mild, at least comparatively. And then it slowly, as the year progresses, gets a little worse and a little worse and a little worse. And then it all just sort of culminates in December. Because it's people with temporary jobs, and everyone's shopping or going to holiday parties, and it just becomes a nightmare. Like, it becomes glaringly, glaringly, obviously worse in December, and I can't stand it. And my wife, God bless her, I love her, she does this thing, and I call it traffic optimism. She's always just, I don't understand, like, weirdly optimistic about traffic. You know, it's always, she always assumes it's going to be better than it is. She goes, you know, it's always for some weird reason, like, oh, well, you know, it's like 70 degrees out. So I feel like when it's 70 degrees or less and there's a sanguine moon, like, I feel like traffic's usually not bad around this. I said, no, it's 6 o'clock on a Thursday. Of course it's going to be terrible. Of course it's going to be bad. But she just always has the optimism about it. Like, no, we should be okay. And then inevitably we go and it's terrible and always surprised. And I'm always surprised at how surprised you are about this. Why are you so surprised? It's always bad. As somebody who drives, you know, for those of you who know me, I have my own IT company. And so I have customers that are all over the place. I mean, I may be driving out to Orange County or LA or the West sort of Valley or, you know, Rancho Cucamonga. And so I'm always on the road and I'm always going places. And I've just learned to never be surprised at traffic. It doesn't matter where, it doesn't matter when. It could be 3 a.m., you know, on the 15 freeway, going north or whatever. And something could have happened. Something could be bad. Like you just learn to never be surprised and you just develop, I guess we could probably be called a certain amount of traffic pessimism. Like, okay, this is just how it is. And you just sort of go with it. You know, but it is what it is. And it gets bad during December, I really feel like. But, you know, it's never, you know, being in Southern California and Los Angeles County specifically, you know, you just, it's just a way of life. And it's just something you just learn to deal with and you just sort of work with or you work around. Or you do whatever. So that's sort of it. This episode is brought to you by Balcones Texas Single Malt. That's the whiskey I mentioned earlier that my wife had gotten me. Very, very lovely. So according to this, it's Texas-based, as I mentioned earlier. I think they're based in Waco. According to their website, and I'm not sure if this is still a case or if this was once the case or whatever, they claim to be the first distillery in Texas since Prohibition, which I think is a pretty remarkable thing. You know, Texas is a big and a well-known and a fairly prosperous state. So the fact that there has been nobody, at least legally, distilling anything in that entire state since around the time my grandmother was born, or at least was a little girl, is pretty, I think it's pretty remarkable. But you know, anyway, they claim they were the first in that area, and very good stuff. They've got a handful of very interesting things. The one I have is their single malt. Again, it's another American, you know, sort of barley single malt sort of whiskey, which is lovely. Very much modeled after, you know, sort of Scottish style. It is aged for, I think, no more than like a couple of years. It's aged using fresh sun-baked Texas oak in a very secretive process. And I think they've changed their process up a few times. So I've read some different reviews where different people said different things. And I know they've changed proofs as they've gone on. This current bottling is bottled at 106 proof. That is 53% alcohol, which for those of you who don't know is pretty high, especially for a Scottish style kind of whiskey. You know, most scotches tend to be in the 40s. American whiskeys tend to be a little higher. They tend to feel a little more freedom to kind of bump that up. But like anything 50 and above is considered pretty hot. And it tastes that way too. Apparently there was a blind tasting over in London where some blokes, as it were, sort of pitted it against a few of, you know, traditional Scottish brands, guys like Balvenie and Macallan, and I think one of the Glenlivets or Glenmorangie, one of the Glens. There's so many. And it won the Best in Glass Award. And everyone was shocked, like, oh my goodness, this whiskey, a rather young one, out of a distillery in Texas, of all things, seems to have really caught our attention, and they were sort of very pleased with the whole thing. And for good reason. Tasting it, it's got lots of wonderful flavor. That at least to me reminds me of some Speyside scotches, some dried fruit and some pear. And this is my very amateur kind of review of the whiskey. Some kind of toasty vanilla and just some other things I'm not really sure about. But it's really wonderfully flavorful. And as I mentioned before, it's a high proof. So while it's sort of hot on the palate and it sort of goes down hot, you also get a lot of rich flavor in the mouth. And the finish on it is really nice and long and lingering. And it's wonderful. And it's one of the things that I do appreciate about just American distilling in general. I was at a store, it's a bottle shop in Costa Mesa called High Time Wine and Spirits or something to that effect. If you're ever in the Southern California area and you want a really great, great bottle shop, with great prices and really nice and wonderful and knowledgeable staff, High Time is like one of the best. They're really wonderful. Their wine, especially if you're a wine drinker, their wine selection alone is like a library with just these, you know, this labyrinth of just hallways and shelves of, you know, with little signs above them reading the countries that they're from. It's a really great place. But I was talking with the guy there a while back, and we were just commenting on whiskeys in general. And he mentioned that, he says, you know, in, you know, Scotland and like Japan and some of these other places, you know, for them, a lot of what goes into making a good whiskey is smoothness in character, like something that goes down easy. And most people who drink a whiskey, that's what they expect when they think of, quote, good whiskey, is they expect it to be smooth. So when they drink something, one of the first things they comment is like, oh, that's smooth. Oh, look how that's very smooth. Or like, oh, that's not very smooth. It's not, I don't think that's very good. So they immediately associate smoothness with quality. Which, I mean, is not completely arbitrary. There is, you know, certainly something to be said for that. But for most people, it's a little too one-dimensional that way. But what he was commenting was that, you know, one of the things I like about American whiskeys and American distilling is that we're not afraid to punch you in the nose a little bit, as he put it, you know, and just make things a little stronger, a little bolder. And with that, you get, you know, stronger, richer flavors, longer, more lingering sort of finishes. And, you know, if it's a little too hot, fine. Add a little water, you know, smooth it out a bit. And in doing so, maybe open up other flavors that aren't necessarily as evident when you're just sort of drinking it sort of straight. And I think this whiskey here is a good example of that. You know, rather than make something that was sort of smooth, and so it felt, you know, by comparison to some of these other, you know, distilleries, easy to drink, they stuck with just richness and flavor and length of finish, and it makes for just a wonderfully flavored thing. I really enjoy it. Even right now, I'm still having just the remnants of it on my palate, and it's got this wonderful, I don't know if it's sort of buttery or kind of mouthfeel that's very pleasant just on my tongue, and I'm really, really enjoying it. So I thank my wife very much for getting this for me. I had kind of had my eye on it for a while, and I half suspected she was going to get it for me, but you know, I wasn't entirely sure. I didn't want to set that expectation just in case she had something else in mind. And it was funny, she actually did this thing where she put it in a box with a bunch of other crap. so that way I wouldn't get wise. So I'm like opening it up, and I'm pulling out things that I already have, thinking like, dude, I already have this. Why is she getting this from me? And in the middle was the bottle, and it was a nice, wonderful little surprise. She's very thoughtful that way. So Balcones single malt, definitely worth the taste. Going into the new year, just reminiscing and thinking of stuff from 2013. You know, of course, people are coming up with their resolutions and things they like to see. One of the things I feel like I noticed, and I don't know if it's just me noticing it more, because as I'm trying to post internet content, you sort of become more cognizant of what other people are doing, or maybe this is becoming more popular in this past year or so. I feel like everybody and their mother has like a blog now, and everyone's trying to be an amateur writer, and everyone's, you know, doing their thing. So inevitably, when something happens in the news, or some bit of news, you know, some bit of something happens, I'll see all these people posting from either their favorite blog or their own blog, and like, I think this was an interesting read or an interesting take on this particular thing. And I guess it's not so, you know, and that in and of itself is not a big deal. Like, you know, right now we have this wonderful medium where everybody can sort of, you know, post their thoughts and their opinions, and, you know, hopefully the cream rises to the, you know, to the top and all that sort of business. But I guess what I find sort of mildly or vaguely annoying about the whole thing is, I feel like most people feel like they have to come at everything from like an angle. You know, it's not just, you know, I'm reporting the news. And of course, you know, by the nature of the medium, I guess people want to try to put something up there that's sort of interesting or compelling. But I feel like it's always interesting or compelling in the exact same way. Everyone wants to post their angle on it. So, you know, for example, when Miley Cyrus does her whole nonsense earlier this year, everybody had their angle as far as, and it's always something like, I know that everybody is thinking about this whole incident in one particular way, and everyone's focusing on this one thing, but here's what everybody should be focusing on. Here's what nobody is saying, which is not true, because inevitably there's a large group of people that are saying that same thing, but everyone has, here's the thing that nobody's saying. In fact, first of all, whenever I hear that, it always sounds so stupid to me. Like, you know, I'm just going to say the thing that nobody's saying. No, a lot of people are probably saying it. You probably have a whole support group and a whole slew of crackpot websites that are probably saying that thing. But in your mind, nobody's saying it. But anyhow, I digress. So inevitably, the angle is always like, I'm going to show you and demonstrate why this is sexist, why this is racist, why this is a sad commentary on what we find important in society nowadays. Like, it's always just those kind of angles, and it's always just some uppity, just preachy, just goofy freaking person, you know, or it's like, you know, here's the thing that nobody is reporting on in the media right now, and it's this one sort of thing. And I think a lot of it is, I feel like people need to read these sort of like hidden motivations and hidden eccentricities into things that aren't necessarily always there, because everybody wants surprising discoveries and surprising results. Everybody wants like, I'm blowing the lid off of this thing. I remember noticing for a while, like on trailers.apple.com, for a while there was just this huge number of these documentaries that were exposés on everything from the meat industry and the fishing industry and where we get our water from and where do we get this from. And it's just because we just have this bent to like trying to come up with sort of surprising discovery. Everybody wants to be the next Freakonomics guy. Like, everybody wants to, like, this one thing that you guys all believe and think, I'm going to show you why it's completely wrong. Everybody wants to be that person. I think it's both in the sort of it's in popular sort of culture, but it's also in scientific culture and the scientific sort of culture and community as well. I remember reading not too long ago, I think maybe a few issues back, it was a really interesting series of articles in The Economist just kind of saying that, you know, there's a lot of scientific research out there that's kind of bad. And a lot of the reasons sort of why, and one of the reasons they sort of harped on was that people want surprising results. Nobody wants to come out and publish the paper or show the findings that display that, yeah, you know, that thing that's that opinion that's sort of very popularly held and very commonly assumed, Yeah, that's pretty much correct. Nobody wants to say that. Everyone wants to blow the lid off of something or show you why everything you know about this thing is wrong. Like, everybody wants to be that guy, and I feel like that's kind of what drives, you know, a lot of it. Nobody wants to confirm. Nobody wants to simply confirm what everybody sort of already knows. And everyone just kind of, I think we've just gotten so much this way that we assume now that the unconventional or sort of, you know, unofficial statement or unofficial answer is now sort of the correct one. And you just have people now who just kind of just go around, they're always assuming that. So when the official statement on a particular event or a particular story or a particular thing comes out, everyone just naturally assumes, yeah, this is corporations, man. They're just, clearly they don't want to say what's really going on, or the government doesn't want to say what's really happening. You know, but I get it. I can read between the lines. And so then they, you know, but some crackpot, you know, news website or whatever posts some, you know, some goofy fact or some goofy graphic or whatever, and they will just immediately assume that, well, that's probably correct. Yeah, I bet you that's true. You know, so-and-sos are in bed with the neo-Nazis. Yeah, that sounds like something that would probably happen. Everyone just kind of assumes that's true now. So we don't scrutinize these things, you know, those sort of opinions anymore, those sort of opinions that are contradictory to the commonly held or traditionally held belief. You know, and you're still being naive. You know, maybe you're not blindly swallowing the official statement, but you are blindly swallowing the unofficial one. So, you know, you're not really doing any better. But just, you know, I feel like the more informed people are, and it's easy to be informed, at least in a very pedantic sort of way with the internet nowadays, like there's just the number of websites and just the amount of data people can sort of allocate and digest and, you know, aggregate nowadays is just, it's astounding. Everybody has a general sense now of just being well-informed because of the couple of little news blips or websites that they sort of, you know, read or watch that usually are just designed to confirm what they already think anyway, rather than really arrive at anything new or real or truthful. But again, everyone just wants that surprising result. Chesterton, yeah, I'm going to say something about him again. He made an interesting comment about H.G. Wells back at the time. And his comment was about how H.G. Wells' early work, and I think it was with regards to his view on humanity, was very sort of controversial and countercultural and sort of radical and surprising. And then his later work, as he put it, had the courage to be more conservative. And the way he put it, I think I'm going to paraphrase terribly here, and I think it was either in Heretics or I think it was in his book Heretics. He said that H.G. Wells did the bravest thing that an intellectual, well-educated, progressive, modern person can do, and that is to state, or to at least concede, that the popular opinion is the correct one. And that's so very true, because, I mean, even back then among the intelligentsia, that was always the bent, that was always the you know, the sort of guiding factor in so much of this stuff, is like, we have to, the thing that everyone thinks has got to be wrong. We are going to come up with and show everyone how everything they know is wrong on subject X, Y, and Z. And it's just so evident. I think, I don't know. Anything that you do to compromise the honesty of a particular subject, whether it's that or whether it's being snotty or prideful about it, you're always just going to just say something that's just silly and not true. And I don't know. I really feel like people just need to kind of people need to kind of examine their own motivations and their own emotions when they sort of go on these sort of, you know, tangents and really determine, am I really coming to these conclusions? Am I really trying to discover something truthful here? Or do I just want to surprise everybody? Do I just want to, you know, blow the lid off of something? So, I don't know. That's what it is. Do I have time for another subject? Yeah, probably not. I don't know. I need more material for later. So, all right. Well, that is David Martinez signing off. Thank you all so much for listening. I really appreciate all the time. And I hope you guys have a wonderful and prosperous new year. And I look forward to trying to entertain you in the coming year as well. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.